Nobody really want fuego. Messiah will bring fire down worse than Waco. Buy you some coffee and Lego, your Eggos, your sandwich with mayo and two slices of mayo. Sitting at home on the couch playing Halo, but the Messiah ain't playing no Eggos. Games, women in pants gonna get it. Flames, brothers keeping no commandments. Same, calling our armies a favor. Even with your NATO and soldiers with Dracos. Just tell me, how can you stop a tornado? Or better yet, the lava from the volcano. They really can't, bro. They have to pay, bro. The most I say so. So in chase they go for all their wicked atrocities they owe. For all their wicked atrocities they owe. From San Diego to Trinidad Tobago, I'm spitting these words so all Israelites they know. Keeping commandments the only way we grow, so we can defeat the nation Galileo. Nation Galileo, get it? Cause they pale. He's bringing them hell for every bill of sale. So family, just examine yourself. When that fuego come, you don't wanna get left. Forsake your sins so you complete the test. Then you can have complete rest from all your stress. Fight to do right to your very last breath, or stay wicked and receive second death. Destruction of enemies is muy bueno. Make sure that's one of the things that you pray for. Into the kingdom, the sinners, they can't go. The sinners can't go. So we say, hasta luego, hasta luego.
Brothers really don't want fuego. Sisters really don't want fuego. Nobody really want fuego. From the one that's super dead.
Turn it.
Fuegos really don't want fuego.
Turn it.
Fuegos really don't want fuego.
Turn it.
Nobody really want fuego.
Hey,
from the one that's super dead.
Fuego.
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 Brother,
you don't want that fuego.
Hey.
Fuego.
Fuego.
Nah, sister, you don't want that fuego. Nah, fuego.
Fuego.
Nobody really want fuego.
Nah,
nobody really want fuego.
Fuego.
From the one that's super negro.
Something got disconnected from there, I think. Yeah. We gotta, well, don't worry about it now. We'll figure it out. As long as it's working. Shalom, shalom. Welcome to the Native Latin and Black Lost History. The Power Hour, the Lost 144K. That thing threw me off big time.
Yeah.
Yo, you all right, bro? You look like you're getting ready to, like, really spit, bro.
Yeah, I'm ready.
He's like, oh, meditating. I'm Captain Yahshua.
Hey, shalom. Happy Sabbath, Captain Amariah.
That's the loud Captain Amariah. Just all breaking microphones and breaking mic stands.
Shalom, so the liaison.
And so is Joe Hawking.
Hey, that's the Aparium seat, so that's nothing that Aparium would do.
Gosh,
that's what he would be like.
Gone for 1 week, and then this is what happens, right? Crazy.
Yo, I don't know what happened here, bro. That whole thing like popped out. It's all right. Don't fix it now.
All right, let me just. All right. Okay.
Anyway, this week we're going to be discussing a little bit about institutional racism. It's called No Relief for Our People. I'll give the definition of institutional racism. I'm sure many people heard about one of the articles we're going to reference. I'll save the other one if we're able to get to it in time. But just to give you an example of institutional racism. So institutional racism, also known as systemic racism, is a form of racism expressed in the practice of social and political institutions. It is reflected in disparities, right? So meaning you see it in the large difference regarding wealth, income, criminal justice, employment, housing, healthcare, political power, and education, among other factors. So something that was popping off this week, and I'm sure everybody saw, was in this latest occurrence of institutional racism, a 10-year-old black child was, I'm going to say was, facing an assault charge because they backed off of it because of all the media attention they got. Was facing an assault charge because he allegedly hit another child, a white child, in the face with the ball while playing dodgeball. I've gotten hit in the head and the face playing dodgeball before. That's kind of expected that you're going to get hit with the ball, no? It's called dodgeball.
Well, not like that, but we're just dicks by nature, so that's what we aim for. This is the head.
Right, right.
So like, we aim for the soft spots because we think it's funny as
funniest. Right. It's actually a poor strategy.
No, really, no.
Because the head's going to get you gotta get the body. Especially when you got a big body like that.
Whoa.
He said, whoa.
We passed the ball.
He said, season.
Right.
Oh, play basketball like right to the head. Put your chest behind. Oh, my goodness. It's criminal. It's criminal, I think months after the fact. And the mother of the white child apparently knew that, oh, he has some condition that he bruises easy or whatever it is. As far as it playing in the context, like whether there's a letter on file with school or something like that, that's a contact sport.
You're literally like, we used to play a variation about suicide.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you have to go to the ball, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you have to run to the wall, before you need, you know, I told you, it was like 5, 6 yards, it was only 4 corners,
right?
I mean, not bloody, it's not like his face, I'm going to play on me, it's a place,
cursed shall I be in the field.
So, of course, you know, we know that
historically we were cursing the fields and, you know, the tobacco fields, the sugarcane fields, all the plantation fields that were owned by our oppressors, where they got this free slave labor from us. And we fast forward it up to today, we're cursing the city, right? Because we take on these proverbs and bywords so easily, then now we're seen as the minority in these base people. That's why you can have something like a 10-year-old, you know, black kid in charge with assault, playing a contact sport with a white kid. Cursed in the city.
Right. Read that again.
Chapter 28, verse 16.
Hold the whole thing.
Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 16. Cursed shall I be in the city, and cursed shall I be in the field.
Come on.
Cursed shall be thy basket and thy store.
So, biblically, that's saying institutional racism.
Right.
Those verses right there are saying institutional racism.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Except that term did not exist until 1967, when Stokely Carmichael was the first one to coin it. But biblically, the curses were there from the outset. It said, hey, that term wasn't there for us to say systemic or institutional racism, but essentially what the Bible is saying there, in all areas, in all facets, this thing is going to be there. Start at 15.
Verse 15. But it shall come to pass, if thou wilt not hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God.
And the reason, right, because I'm going to set the tone, because everybody's going to love the topic, right? Yeah, racism is the topic of racism.
Right, right.
And you should, because there should be an awareness, right? But it's going to explain why, okay? Why? Come on.
To observe, to do all his commandments,
right,
and his statutes, which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee and overtake thee.
All these curses that we're about to go over shall come upon thee and overtake thee. And guess what? Institutional racism is one of the curses.
That's right.
You wonder why it's there. You wonder why it's like that. Why doesn't white Jesus like me? I go to his schools. I try to talk like him. Mm-hmm. I try to marry,
right. That's right.
You know, into his culture.
Right. That's the people that cry out the most when you think about it, is the people that are so accepting of homosexuality,
mm-hmm.
so accepting of interracial marriage. And I'm speaking for my own personal family, right? I'm talking, I'll see a post, or it's like, man, you would think all this person needs is a flyer to wake up, but they've been given flyers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then it's like, oh, I can't believe this just happened. But then their next post, they're posting up them having a get together with their gay son and his lover. And it's like, bro, come on, really?
Right, right. So, and basically what he's really saying there, because those are people that are not familiar with the curses of our people. The Bible has the answers for that.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I'll give you an example. You had Dwayne Wade, right? And his wife,
yeah.
Gabrielle Union, they're very vocal about,
right,
you know, racism and all this other stuff. They've spoken about it. They're very, you know, I wouldn't say they're necessarily activists for it, but they give commentary. They have their follow. You know, in the world that we live in today, everything's about social media. They have their followers. They would be considered in social media vernacular as influencers, right, because of their following. And they're, in one breath, they're going to talk about all the injustices against our people. And then in another, they're going to be there. Yeah, I support my son at Gay Pride. He wants to be at Gay Pride.
Right.
He wants to feel like he's like this and like that. They're attacking Mario Lopez, right, now, because, you know, and I don't think he said anything inflammatory. I heard the excerpt from his from the radio show that he was doing with.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, listen, I just think it's dangerous when a child at 3 years old will look up, mm-hmm. and say, hey, mommy, I'm a girl and it's a boy. And then you start to say, okay, and now because of that, you start dressing them like a girl, you start doing, mm-hmm. those things, whatever it might be. And he goes, I think it's dangerous because they don't have an awareness yet of what that really means.
And they don't understand that. Cap, you're super on point with that, because even that's biblical. Because we have people ask us questions and they say, so at what age do you start making kids fast?
Mm-hmm.
At what age do you start teaching, right, them certain things? And the scripture says when they're able to understand,
right,
certain things.
And the way you gauge the understanding, it says when they're able to ask you,
right,
what does this mean?
Right.
Right. Like what? And not just, and not something random. They're talking about historically, biblically. What does it mean? You know, why do we keep the Passover?
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, you might get that question at 5 if you have a very astute child. Right. And I'm talking about that. You got to understand something. What's left out of that verse is that not just why do we keep Passover, and you tell them and they're like, oh, OK, there has to be a, they're able to have a dialogue with your child,
mm-hmm.
about why we do that or why we do this, and not just because God says.
Right.
Meaning you're able to sit down and tell them about the curses and things like that, because some people go off the rails with that. Like, oh, no, yeah, my son asked me. Here you go, fast. Break bread.
Right.
Right.
You know
right.
what I'm saying? You need to be – because a kid's always ask why. What's that?
Yeah.
What's why? What's this?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I forgot what did my daughter ask. She asked me something the other day when we were going to school. Oh, she was asking about a soul.
Oh.
And she was like, do we have a soul? How do we know? What's this? What's that? And I'm noticing the dialogue with her is changing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting to a point where now I'm having a discussion with her about these questions where it used to be, Daddy, why do we do this? Well, because the Bible says this, honey. And there was never a follow-up, okay, Daddy, because God said that.
Right.
But now when you get a follow-up and you're able to have a dialogue with the child, now you're starting to see understanding, right? And that's when you can go ahead. So that's in righteousness. Same thing like Mario Lopez was saying on the radio.
Absolutely.
You can't go, a kid, my son tells me he's Batman. Or
right,
he's
exactly.
Or he's Catboy. Or he's freaking
right.
Blaze from Blaze and the
Power Rangers.
Right. So
wait.
Like,
so it's not just talking about him. With about FICO scores and things
no,
like that?
No, we have those serious conversations. I'm grooming him. We talk about it. I let him know what his FICO score is. his credit score is better than mine.
Dad, what's a FICO?
That's a FICO. So, well, it's a Fair Isaac credit
right.
organization. So, but, so does that mean now I'm going to freaking run around and make sure all his clothes are PJ Masks and he does everything?
Right.
Because he says I'm Catboy? So you get what I'm saying? Like if he says I'm Superman or I'm Spider-Man, okay, son, you're Spider-Man. You're going to identify as Spider-Man. Like, that's how ridiculous it is that at 3 years old, at 4 years old, maybe even at 5 years old, that a kid is telling you that, and you're going to say, okay, so then yes, you're a girl, or so then yes,
yeah.
you're a boy.
Well, that's why I like that Edomite so much, Ben Shapiro.
Mm-hmm.
As much as he's a pompous prick, right? That dude,
he really is. His
that
voice
dude,
is annoying.
That dude does not sway away from what he believes in, and he's actually very, very educated in a lot of the different things. And he'll say, "Listen, you identifying as something that you're not is a mental illness, and it takes away my First Amendment rights to have to call you something that you're
yes.
not."
Right.
And I'm like, boom.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Next video. Like, let's go. Let's go.
Yeah. There was this two gay dudes, right? They adopted a baby. I think it was a little boy or whatever. But what they did was when it started crawling, they put a blue color and a pink color in front of it. And they kept on running tests because the baby kept on going to the blue color. Then it finally went to the pink. They're like, oh, he wants to be a girl. He wants to be a girl. So they dress him up as a girl now because he went to that pink color one time.
Right. And guess what will happen if you start a child that young? They're gonna grow up feminine and they're
right.
gonna think they're a girl.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yep.
They've done experiments on it on grown people where they've put people into and I want to get back on topic with the institutional racism because we're making a point with this. But they've done it where they've done experiments. I forgot what it was called. It was an experiment. They made a movie on it which dramatized it, but there was an experiment, I would have to look it up, where they took some people and they locked them in a prison and they said, okay, you're gonna be the prison guards, you're gonna be the prisoners. And these are the ways, this is how prison guard acts. These are how prisoners
mm-hmm.
act. And like within days, like these people went freaking nuts. Like they embodied and embraced
mm-hmm.
what they, none of these were convicted felons.
Mm-hmm.
None of these were trained prison guards, none of that stuff. And they actually basically became what the experiment told them to be. So basically putting in the right circumstances and right situations, people are going to choose to be that way. Like you said, Shapiro says it's a mental illness.
Right. They became a product of their environment.
Right. And by mental illness, that's what the world calls it. We know biblically you got some spirits on
yep.
you,
right.
right?
Yep.
That you need to exercise. All right. And the commandments keep us from that. So going back to the whole thing with institutional racism, right? We read that these curses would be upon you. Institutional racism is a curse. Let's go back to Deuteronomy 28, 16 and 17.
Deuteronomy.
And then I'm going to read the definition of institutional racism.
Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 16. Cursed shalt thou be in the city, and cursed shalt thou be in the field.
Right. So that means whether you live in Spanish, it says el campo or whatever, right? El campo is like the field. Listen, whether you in the sticks, whether you live somewhere where it's not so popular, or whether you live in the big city where everybody's liberal, all right, it says you are going to be cursed. It means no matter where you go, it says these curses will pursue thee and overtake thee. Come on.
Cursed shalt thou be. Cursed shall be thy basket and thy store.
So it's telling you, listen, they tell you pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Mm-hmm. It says you're never, you may be able to own businesses, you may be able to have stores, you may be able to do things like that. Because some people will talk about this, right? And they'll say, well, that was once. That was for that time. First of all, there's many verses in this chapter that talk about it'll be forever and upon your seed forever. And in addition, it's talking about your store, all right? It uses the word store. Mm-hmm. When they were in the wilderness, there was no freaking store, all right? this was given to them in the wilderness. There was no store, all right? It's letting you know that this thing was going to pursue you. It was going to be everywhere no matter where you went. So now I want to read about institutional racism, all right? So it says institutional racism, also known as systemic racism, is a form of racism expressed in the practice of social and political institutions. It is reflect so social and political institutions, meaning everywhere, meaning your store, your basket, the city, the field. It is reflected in disparities regarding wealth, income, criminal justice, right? So wealth. We're not this yet. We might have some wealthy people amongst our people, but we're not wealthy as a people by and large, right? It shows you a wealth. You know, I read a years ago, I don't know what the statistic is now. It was called The Millionaire Next Door. It was a book, and then they had a follow-up, The Millionaire Mind. And it was basically a sociological study on the behaviors and habits of people, you know, not the crazy success stories of celebrity or you invented something, but how your average person winds up becoming wealthy. And by average, they found that, by and large, the most wealthy people in America were actually Russians. And which is still Edom, which is still Caucasians. Mm-hmm. And then they had a list of stuff like, you know, and it went on and on. But the point that I'm making is that whenever you speak about wealth, right, it's always going to start with Edom and the other nations, mm-hmm. right? Wealth is not synonymous with our people, right? Mm-hmm. It isn't. I mean, look at Venezuela with the oil reserves and everything else that they have. And they're not a wealthy company, right. A country right now, right? They're disparaged. And we understand there's a lot of different things that are going on with that. We've spoken about it on the show, all right? But income. You know it's true. We have the lowest paying jobs. We can go to a school and have an equally qualified person, and you're another race, and you wind up getting more. Criminal justice. I mean, that could be a series of shows on its own, right? The school to prison pipeline.
All right.
What happened with this young boy being charged with the dodgeball thing, which we'll get to the article in a moment. That's criminal justice. Employment. Last hired, first fired. Right. We're judged differently. We're deemed differently. We're punished differently by and large. I mean, when you go back to the child, let's talk about the school. They said that they did studies not too long ago where they were showing that minority children get suspended and expelled from school far more than white people. And people will say, well, yeah, that's because you do more stuff. Hold on. Let me finish the statement. Mm-hmm. With equal types of behavior, with similar types of behavior and equal infractions. Look at a guy that got off from rape because right. he was so yeah. good in college and he was a lacrosse player and mm-hmm. had a young, promising career, mm-hmm. right? Housing, redlining, right? Where they basically price us out. They wouldn't give us mortgages and things like that. We move in, they move out. Or right. gentrification now. There so now is. They want these areas back. So they come in and it starts with the Starbucks.
Whole right? food.
Then you put the Whole Foods. All the stuff that's too expensive for our people in general as a people to afford. Right? And then they wind up taking things back. Healthcare. Mm-hmm. Man, I've done studies when I was going for my dental hygiene degree. And then I as a follow-up, I was going for nutrition and public health, and one of my first courses that I had to take was a writing intensive on the healthcare system, and I had to do like a paper, like a 10-page paper at the end, and I chose disparities in healthcare, and healthcare by and large is correlated with socioeconomic status, and that goes from dental, that goes from everything else, basically meaning we get access to the poorest, most subpar healthcare. And it puts us in a frame of mind. It's a vicious cycle because we're aware of this, that we just decide not to go anymore.
Yep.
And we start trying to deal with these ailments and these illnesses without getting the proper care because it's not really available to underserved communities is what they call it. That's hip talk for saying the Black and Hispanic community. All right. Political power. I mean, look at how big of a deal it was that Barack Obama was elected.
Mm-hmm.
Look at how far and few in between. Look at the sentiment towards these female House representatives.
Yep.
Talking about go back to your country and everything
right,
like
don't
that.
Help your
right? Education. Even in the education system, again, we're not treated the same. This is going into the criminal justice and education, the topic with the young boy is the same thing,
mm-hmm.
right? And it says, among other factors. Now, this is what I'm saying. Biblically, what we read in Deuteronomy 28, 16, and 17, that's, in other words, that's saying institutional racism. It says the term institutional racism was coined and first used in 1967 by Stokely Carmichael, made alone as Kwame Ture. And Charles versus Hamilton in Black Power, The Politics of Liberation. Carmichael and Hamilton wrote that while individual racism is often identifiable because of its overt nature,
mm-hmm.
institutional racism is less perceptible.
Mm-hmm.
And institutional racism is by and large a result of white privilege and white supremacy, right? Because I don't know that we'll have time to get to the secondary article that I want to read, but there's this big discussion. I had happened across a video the other day that was recommended to me. I don't know if you know who Adam Carolla is.
Mm-hmm.
It was like such a facetious way that they were doing it. He was on some show, I guess, with some other Edomite. And he was like, yeah, you know, so they were talking about white privilege. He says, can you tell me about your white privilege? And he was like, yeah, I have an interesting take on that. He was like, yeah, please tell us. And basically he's going on and on how hard he had it, how he had to work for this and he had to work for that. And so he just totally doesn't get the point of what that is. It goes back. This is what I'm saying. So to me, white privilege, white supremacy. And I'm not talking about the white supremacists that are out there rallying. I'm just talking about the passive benefit
right.
that white people, who the Bible calls Esau, Edom, all right? The passive benefit that they get, right, is not as perceptible because institutional racism is not as perceptible. They say, well, you guys got affirmative action. You got civil rights. You have quotas and standards and everything else. The mere fact that we need that,
I was just gonna say that.
Should tell you right. that something is wrong.
I was just
you guys have
say that.
All black colleges.
Because if not for that, we'd have never even had that.
Right.
Right. That actually proves that systemic racism is actually a thing. The fact that you have affirmative action.
Right. That it's necessary.
Right.
Right? I mean, listen, come on,
man.
You're telling me that if in Beverly Hills the water was poisoned.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah.
And it was not Flint, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
That you're telling me that if it was Beverly Hills that the water was contaminated for years and it's still not resolved,
mm-hmm.
that thing wouldn't have been fixed by now?
Man. It would have been fixed the first week. It would have been like
16 hours of downtime. That's
mm-hmm.
it.
That's it.
They would have piped it in from the next. let's get it from East LA. Let's just take
the same
their water.
Thing. They're piping it from East LA.
Let's just take it from East LA. Thing. Boom. Right? Let's just take it from them.
Solved.
And you're telling me that we don't have an issue? You're telling me that what's going on in Chicago with the violence. Now it starts with our own people and that murderous spirit. All right? I'm not going to take any onus away from our people. But if something like that was happening in another type of socioeconomic neighborhood
Scottsdale.
Where minorities were, let's say it was happening in Scottsdale, that thing wouldn't be cleaned up. They'd call in the damn National Guard if they needed to,
mm-hmm.
right?
To fix that thing.
The crack epidemic. They weren't caring about it when it was in the ghettos.
Well, they made that.
Right.
They created that.
Right. Then it reached to their neighborhoods, and that's when they started making the commercials.
And that's when they started saying everything like that. Right. So they started getting put crack is whack.
Yeah.
Right. meanwhile, the crack epidemic was a CIA operation.
Right.
So that they can generate more money to buy illegal arms to fund their interference in Central South America, what they were doing with the guerrillas and everything. But that's a whole – let me not even – because, you know, that's the new thing now, right? Like they're saying there was another article I saw that they're moving away from black identity extremist as a term. And they're not even going to talk about white supremacist. Now it's conspiracy theories are being treated as they call it, I think, domestic conspiracy terrorist. So now you have a thing where so basically they're taking away the racial aspect of it because people were starting to say, how come you're not going after the white supremacist and you have black identity extremists? They goes, oh, no, those terms aren't going to be used anymore. Now, if you discuss conspiracy theories, you start to go on their watch list.
That's Psalms 83.
Yeah, and how they define conspiracy theory is not you just saying chemtrails or whatever it is, right? I'll use one like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is basically if you're saying that there's a larger systemic type of plan, if you basically say there's a Psalms 83,
right?
You're watched.
Yes.
That's insane.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, if
I gotta try to find the article.
So basically, if you're not saying what the news said, you're a theorist, conspiracy theorist.
It's crazy, man. It's
that's a direct exactly. target against the Bible, because the Bible tells you that we would prophesy against many countries and mm-hmm. nations and kingdoms. So when we say that there's a higher authority that's going to establish this kingdom,
get that
on Earth,
real quick. That's in Jeremiah.
Yeah,
get that
yeah,
real quick.
Jeremiah. That's a direct...
It's an attack on us. It's an attack on the Israelites. I'm not even going to say the Bible, because the Bible's okay if it's under any of those other denominations. They'll let the Bible be preached that way. And then I'm going to jump back to this real quick. But I was saying all that to kind of just tell you how this thing, there's synergies between the type of things they put out. Institutional racism being the foundation of it all. Right. So like, you know, we would join this as a diagram with a pyramid. You have institutional racism. You have white supremacy. You'll have things like this agenda here. You found it?
No, I got that in Esdras. Esther. Esther 13:4.
What do you want to bring up? You got which one is that?
I got sorry.
This is Esther chapter 13:4. Declared unto us. I'm going to start at 3. Now, when I asked my counselors how this might be brought to pass, a man was excelled in wisdom among us and was approved for his constant goodwill and steadfast fidelity, and had the honor of the second place in the kingdom, declared unto us that in all nations throughout the world there was a certain malicious people that had laws contrary to all nations,
mm-hmm.
and continually despised the commandments of kings.
Yeah, that's good right there too.
So as the uniting of our kingdoms honorably intended by us cannot go forward. So basically what they're saying is that there was a particular people that went out and they had a custom or a way about living. They had a way of thinking, laws that made them different from everybody else.
It said contrary.
Yes.
That's the key thing right there. We have laws contrary to what Babylon the Great, a.k.a. America, has set up.
27:8. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, continue. I didn't mean to cut you. I was just telling him. These mics pick up everything. Jeremiah 27:8. Go ahead. Get that real quick.
Oh, it says something similar in 28:8 as well, too.
Really? Does it?
Yeah.
Oh, 28:8. I'm sorry. Yeah.
The book of Jeremiah, chapter 28, verse 8. The prophets that have been before me and before thee of old prophesied both against many countries and against great kingdoms. Of war and of evil and of pestilence.
So now they're calling that domestic conspiracy terrorist is what is the new term, right?
So we're saying Christ is black. That's a conspiracy terrorist.
They try to say they throw that, you know, they have to see violent things or whatever. But I mean, you know, we've saw the story on the black identity extremists. That
I was going to say, there were
things that weren't violent.
Farce.
Right.
That's a farce too.
So it says the prophets that have been before me and before thee of old prophesied both against many countries, against great kingdoms of war and of evil and of pestilence. So it's saying if you now do that, you're going to be watched, right? We know we're being watched, you know. I mean, listen, and this is why we make sure that we go out of our way and we talk about Romans 13,
mm-hmm.
which talks about obey the powers that be. These things are not a terror to good works, right? The weapons of our warfare are spiritual, not carnal, right? Nobody should be going out there being a freaking, because you do have conspiracy theory nuts, right? Don't be no freaking conspiracy theory nut. Listen, every time in the Bible that somebody's actually tried to rebel against the powers that be,
mm-hmm.
meaning not keep it biblical, not keep it spiritual, not prophesy based on these scriptures, all right? They've been handled. The Lord has not shown favor on them overcoming anything.
This is why people that first come in, we tell them don't take the bread and drink the wine, because mm-hmm. this is a serious thing.
Right.
Because basically what Esau is doing is, according to Psalms 83, about having crafty counsel against the hidden ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now when we go out and do as the Lord commanded us, he said by the foolishness of preaching, something as simple as going out and prophesying is going to wake our people up. But there's laws not being in place saying you'll be watched as a terrorist if you do those things. So you're prophesying against these many countries and kingdoms and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, I'm telling you, this fight is not for the weak, bro. It's not whatsoever. Because it's only going to become harder and harder and harder and harder.
Hey, but a lot of people, like I said, there's a lot of people that take this as playing church.
That's right.
Right? Let me get Hebrews 11:14. Right?
A lot of people come in here to just check the box. That's it. That is it.
You have to understand this thing, right?
Hebrews 11:14?
Yeah, Hebrews 11:14, please.
The book of Hebrews 11:14. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country.
They that say the things that are all encompassed under Jeremiah 28:8. They that prophesy and tell our people, hey, you are the Israelites. Those of us preaching Deuteronomy 28, 2 Ezra, Lamentations 5. Those of us showing people that Christ is a black man according to the scriptures, that all the prophets and the Most High God himself is what you would call black. All right. Telling our people that you must repent and keep his commandments, that the Bible's for you and only you. It says they that say these things, come on,
declare plainly that they seek a country.
It says we declare plainly that we seek a country. The Lord's Prayer says, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Not the will of your presidents, not the will of your prime ministers, not the will of the UN, of Congress, or the Senate. Yeah. In this present world, yes, let right. that be done, because God has put those people into power, according to Romans 13. But it says, we declare plainly that we seek a country. It says, thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Saying we want, right? So really what you're saying is, it sounds treasonous. Now, we will not take any action on that. We will stand right. for that, right? I mean, that's how we roll. We're not here. Nobody's telling you go do anything. If anything, I tell you how much I love Trump, because he shows. Right? Listen, and if you're really in the spirit, you love any president that the Lord puts up, right? And I don't mean that you love them, that you like them, and you're like going to support them, right? You're entitled to your views and disagreements and things like that. But what I mean is God's will, so I love it,
mm-hmm.
right? Anything right. that the Most High does, I'm going to love it. Oh, he put this one up. Okay, yeah, that's what he wants to put up. It could be the alderman in your freaking district.
It's right.
like, hey, all praises. The Most High put that person in.
Anyone that says that they seek a country don't really understand what that really means, that you're seeking the country, as far as the tribulations, the trials, all the stuff that comes with it. That's why Christ said, listen, the kingdom of heaven is within you.
Right.
How bad do you want it? Right. What are you willing to give up for it?
Right.
Your life? Because that's what could come down to.
It says, you got to drink of that cup.
Exactly.
What it's going to come down to. The writing's on the wall as to where it's headed. So now something like institutional racism could be seen under that FBI list, right? So it says, Carmichael and Hamilton wrote that while individual racism is often identifiable because of its overt nature, meaning it's very obvious, like mm-hmm. Dylann Roof
right.
killing those people in the church, that's individual racism, mm-hmm. right? That's very obvious. He says institutional racism is less perceptible because of its less overt, far more subtle nature, which would be similar to like this young boy. People are like, oh, he's not just not being charged because he's black. That's not being, right? Institutional racism originates in the operation of established and respected forces in the society, and thus receives far less public condemnation than individual racism. They gave examples. When white terrorists bomb a black church and kill 5 black children, and if this was not a brother talking, they would say when white mentally ill people, because right. right, they were mm-hmm. mentally ill when there you're white, is. Right. It says when white terrorists bomb a black church and kill 5 black children, that is an act of individual racism, widely deplored by most segments of the society. But when in that same city, Birmingham, Alabama, 500 black babies die each year because of the lack of power, food, shelter, medical facilities, and thousands more are destroyed and maimed physically, emotionally, and intellectually because of conditions of poverty and discrimination in the black community, that is a function of institutional racism.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. And the other nations, starting with Esau, who the world knows as the white man,
mm-hmm.
okay, will say, well, no, that's because y'all just are like this and y'all are like that. And listen, our people do have their issues. This is why we go there and we preach these scriptures.
Absolutely.
You got to stop these things. These are the mm-hmm. answers. This is the way you combat institutional racism. the Bible, applying these scriptures. And if we can make some headway where we as a people en masse start doing this, the Bible says this is our wisdom in the sight of the nations. Give me that in Deuteronomy. Do y'all remember where that is?
Yes, sir.
Is
yeah.
it
4 and 6?
Yep,
yes.
4 and 6. While you look for that, I'm going to finish this. It says, when a black family moves into a home in a white neighborhood and is stone burned or routed out, they are victims of an overt act of individual racism, which most people will condemn. But it is institutional racism that keeps black people locked in the dilapidated slum tenements, subject to the daily prey of exploitative slumlords, merchants, loan sharks, and discriminatory real estate agents. The society either pretends it does not know of this latter situation or is in fact incapable of doing anything meaningful about it. Read this real quick. The answer to these things is this right here. Come on.
Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 5. Behold, I have taught you statutes and judgments, even as the Lord my God commanded me.
God commanded us to be taught statutes and judgments. Come on.
That ye should do so.
That we must do them, not hear them, not hear a pretty song. That means application.
That's right.
Bishop came out with that beautiful acronym, right? SPA, study, pray, apply. And where we lack is application.
Bring it out, Kat.
Till this day, even those of us who have been in this thing for years, whenever there is an issue, whether it's individual, whether it's personal, whether it's congregational, it is because of the lack of application on at least one person's part, if not several.
Right.
Because we all study, we all pray. So you got to understand that what's missing is application. The scripture says, do these. Come on.
And do so in the land where ye go to possess it.
It says, wherever ye are. Come on.
Keep therefore and do them.
It says, keep therefore and do these statutes and judgments.
For this is your wisdom in your understanding in the sight of the nations.
This is our wisdom and our understanding in the sight of the nations. Not the not the coonish behavior that we have, not the simple behavior, the hatred, the murderous spirit that we have for each other.
Not how many pairs of Jordans you have.
None of that stuff.
None of that carnal stuff like that.
This is what will heal us. This is what will bring us together. This is what will help us combat. You know, when you use the word institutional, and I'm going to let you speak in a second, right? I want to look up institutional. And then I want you to get me, is it Galatians with principality, spiritual power, right? Get me that.
Ephesians,
that's what it is. Ephesians 6, right? Expressed or organized in the form of institutions. Let me see this. Hold on. I don't like this one. I hate when it says of or relating to an institution. Okay, institution. It says an establishment, a significant practice related or organization in a society or culture, someone or something firmly an established organization. A facility or an establishment which the sick or needy are typically in a confined setting. No, that's not what I want. I want synonyms. Here we go. Foundation Institute, right? So read the part here where it says where we war against. Come on.
Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 12. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood.
It says we wrestle. When you think of wrestling, right? It's a back and forth, it's a constant
battle.
Aggressive battle, right?
That's right.
We wrestle. Because of the institutional racism, amongst many other things that are there, we wrestle day in and day out in this society. It says we wrestle. Come on.
For we wrestle not against flesh and blood.
Not. It's not physical. We should not be out there taking that. And the thing is, it manifests itself that way, which is why you have this murderous spirit, which is why you have this hatred amongst our people, because of the frustration of not being able to fight the institution. What the hell can we do to fight the powers that be?
Yes,
the scripture says don't do anything physically.
Right.
It says spiritually apply these commandments. We just read in Deuteronomy 4 and 6 that this is our wisdom and understanding in the sight of the nation.
It comes down to our people having a lack of faith.
That's exactly what it is, because they think this is not strong enough. They think this is not powerful enough because the way it's been presented to us. And you're damn right, because the way it's been taught to you all your life in the Christian churches, shucking and jiving, singing and dancing. It says, no, that's not what, that's part of what the Lord, yes, rejoice in the Lord.
But your biggest rejoicing, the biggest way you sow glory and honor to the Lord, is by keeping his commandments. Right? Come on, read on.
But against principalities.
Against principalities. Come on.
Against powers.
Against powers. Against institutions. The Bible didn't have the word institutions. Remember, this is a new term, institutional racism. But it says against principalities, against powers. Go ahead.
Against the rulers of darkness.
Against the rulers of darkness. Come on.
Of this world.
Of this world.
Against spiritual wickedness in high places.
It's spiritual wickedness. The Sodom agenda, the transgender thing that we were talking mm-hmm. about, the way the institutional racism that mm-hmm. our people suffer from. That's spiritual wickedness in high places. This last part here where he says the society either pretends it does not know, meaning the principalities, the spiritual wickedness in high places, either pretends it does not know of this latter situation or is in fact incapable of doing anything meaningful about it. They don't want to do anything meaningful about it.
Right.
They like the status quo.
Right.
They like the way things are mm-hmm. because it's the turning of things upside down, the scripture says.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
It's what you were talking about in Judith. They like it that way because it needs to be this way. Look, here's another definition of institutional racism. It says the collective failure of an organization to provide an appropriate and professional service to people because of their color, culture, or ethnic origin. It can be seen or detected in processes, attitudes, and behaviors. Because what's their biggest offense? Oh, you're judging me on attitude, mm-hmm. on because I did this. I wasn't following you in the store.
Yeah,
wasn't doing exactly. that. Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Attitudes and behaviors which amount to discrimination through unwitting prejudice, mm-hmm. ignorance, thoughtlessness, and racist stereotyping, which disadvantage minority ethnic people.
Mm-hmm. That racist stereotyping goes into what we read earlier in verse 37 of
Yes, about Proverbs.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Because they sit back and say, oh, there go a black man. You better clutch your purse. He's going
to
steal.
Man, that just happened to me the other day. I was mad.
It happens. And that's the criminal injustices that are set up from the powers that be.
Right.
That's Psalms 83.
Let me tell you why. This is why you should not take any action, because it'll never work. Right. I'm talking about physical action. The action you should take is the repentance and keeping these commandments
in
the faith of Christ, the black Messiah. I'm going to give you a small example of redlining. Institutional racism in the housing. Tell me how do you fight this? In institutional racism in the housing sector can be seen as early as the 1930s with the Homeowners Loan Corporation.
That's it.
Banks would determine a neighborhood's risk for loan default. Mm. So they would do a demographic study.
They're not gonna pay.
And say Negroes and Hispanics are here. They ain't paying these loans. Mm-hmm. Even if their income's good, even if they got a good job. This place is going to have economic default. The values of the homes won't appreciate as much.
Right.
It says they determine a neighborhood's risk for loan default and redline neighborhoods that were at high risk for default. Mm. Now, redline is the systemic denial. There we go. Systemic, institutional.
Mm-hmm. Principalities.
Right. Principalities, powers, biblically is what it says. Is the systemic denial of various services to residents of specific, often racially associated neighborhoods or communities, either directly or through the selective raising of prices. While the best known examples of redlining have the denial of financial services, what's the raising of prices? Gentrification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Higher interest rates on loans.
Right.
You're in the spirit, Cap. I actually got a scripture just for gentrification.
Go ahead, bring it up.
Can you give me Deuteronomy 28, verse 43 and 44? Cause yeah, I was just talking to my wife about this the other day because we just left from the South Side, and back in my day, you've never seen white people around, but now you see them jogging their dogs, and that's confusing to me. Go ahead, read.
Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 43. The stranger that is within thee shall get above thee very high.
The strangers that's within you. So when these Starbucks start popping in your neighborhood, when you start seeing these Fresh and Easies, all these loans, these different banks is popping up in your neighborhood, these are the strangers, but they're going to get above you very high. Your property tax is going to raise up. You're not going to be able to pay your mortgage or your rent how you used to back in the day, right?
And thou shalt come down very low.
You're going to come very low. That's when the court orders come in. You want to start getting evicted. These are steps of gentrification. These are the steps of gentrification. They're going to raise your property tax, and you're going to be unable to pay your property tax. So that house that your mama had for, not your mom, your grandmama had for 60 years, she can't pay no more. So she has to be pushed into another low part of the neighborhood. Go ahead.
Hey, it's not just the property taxes and stuff. The houses degrade over time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
And where's the money for you to fix them up? So they become these dilapidated buildings, these homes that nobody really wants. You can't even really sell it.
Right.
Not for anything meaningful, right? So it's such a complex formula that they put in place to you can't fight something like that physically.
Right. You hear it so many times where people have to just cut their losses and that's it. They just take massive losses on the houses because they got to just leave them there. Because like you said, you can't sell them. No one's gonna want to buy that. But here comes Esau, comes in and gets it at like a foreclosure price, fixes it up, boom. Flips it.
Hey, and that's really how the gentrification wave has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Is that I'm gonna let you finish your thought, and I want to read the rest of this here. This is talking about the redlining and the institutional racism and housing alone, but you have to see kind of what happened. I'm gonna say it's like a tsunami effect, and I'll explain why I use that analogy. But go ahead, finish.
Yeah, just like Catherine was saying, like you won't be able to pay. You won't be able to pay these. You can't even go to the bank to get a loan because they're going to deny you. For that loan right now. Come on, go ahead.
He shall lend to thee.
He's going to lend to you. If he's going to lend to you, he's going to, you know, give you some money, but you're going to have to pay that back by a high percentage interest rate. Go ahead, read.
And thou shalt not lend to him.
You can't, you won't be able to lend anything back to these strangers because they don't want your money. They don't want one.
Because we ain't got no money.
Exactly. They don't want what you have.
How
do you beat somebody with their own faces? That's my uncle on this dollar bill. How you going to beat somebody with that?
Right.
Hey, check this out real quick. So it says these neighborhoods tended to be African-American neighborhoods wherein the white middle-class Americans were able to receive housing loans. But African-Americans, right? And then, you know, listen, they're going to it happened first with Judah, right? Because and the reason it did was because the tents of Judah had to be raised first. But this was also happening to the Hispanic communities that were here as well. It still does, right? And it says – so they weren't able to get loans. It says over decades, as white middle class Americans left, this is what I said earlier about gentrification. I said they were coming to take their neighborhoods back, because they were once there and they moved out, and now they're coming back. This is why I say it's a tsunami, right? Because a tsunami, the water kind of goes away and then comes back and overflows the shore, right? And it comes up onto the land. So you got this tsunami wave that's coming in the name of gentrification, because what's happened is it says the white Americans left the city to move to nicer houses in the suburbs. The predominantly African-American neighborhoods were left to degrade. So what happens is it degraded the property super low, and then they come back in a wave of gentrification to take it at the lower prices because they're able to get the loans, because they have money, because they're able to set things up, and then they buy the stuff back up, and then we can't afford it because it starts to price us out of the neighborhood.
And then, boom, you got SoBro.
And then you got SoBro, right? Which is
Upper
what,
Manhattan?
Which is, no, because the South Bronx, right, but for I mean, it was known as Little Puerto Rico for, I mean, and it was gutter. We used to break dance all the time.
Yeah.
That's what he says.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Well, the Bronx, I mean, like, they were like the hell with the Bronx. Like, late 70s, early 80s, they were like the hell with the Bronx. Let it burn. Like, they were trying to get funding from the federal government, and they were like the hell with that place. Just let them rot over there, right? The Bronx in general was pretty bad. You still had parts north that were okay, but the South Bronx was, by and large, it's Little Puerto Rico, right? Like that's where, you know, my grandparents were. That's where I would be, like, kind of every weekend. And over the years, they started – I mean, beautiful brownstones and everything like that. And they started to build them up, right? And it started real subtle. It's like, oh, somebody bought that broken-down brownstone. Okay, oh, they're renovating it. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Oh, that whole block all of a sudden got renovated. Oh,
is that Dunkin' Donuts?
Oh, and there's a – and there's a Starbucks on the corner. What happened to Dunkin'? Oh, okay. Not even Dunkin'. What happened to, like, Star Donuts or, like, Kennedy Fried Chicken or something like
Danny's
that?
Danny's
right?
Donuts?
No. Wait, did they just put a Pokeball place in the South Bronx? What the hell is this, right?
Dog parks?
Hell yeah, dog parks.
That's where it starts.
Right? Yeah. Little by little, you started to see. And then before you knew it, it was like, oh, snap. So now what they're calling it is SoBro instead of the South Bronx, because they're trying to make it sound like Soho. and the property values are like, you know, because
and it's like off the water too, right? Like it's, yeah, it's like, so it's like the premium water. Property that bro, like they just yeah. gentrified and made it this beautiful place.
And they came back in, and it's like, I mean, so you know, you still have our people holding on over there, but it's not nearly, you know, there's pockets there where it's still pretty bad, like you know,
bro. It's only a matter of
like
time.
You got the Morrisani area of the, like you just looked that up, like it's one of the most, like it's probably not as deadly as Chicago. Chicago's just crazy right now.
It's amazing that you say that because I grew up down the street from Cabrini Greens.
Oh, okay. All
and
right.
Cabrini Greens is not Cabrini Greens anymore. No. I promise you, when you see it,
are
it's not,
it's not the Notorious that they did documentaries
right.
on and
you,
stuff
you
like
you
that.
You see people walk out.
Cops would not walk in there. You couldn't call the police in Cabrini Greens. They were not coming to help
you. Exactly. They would be shooting up during New Year's Eve and people just let them yeah. out like in South Bronx. Hey, it's a little Puerto Rican. Let them break dance. Let them break their necks.
Let them do what they doing.
But now all of a sudden, now they done gentrified the. They still have the little row houses right there in the area. You'll see it, Lord willing.
Yeah, they're going to fix some things up, though.
They're going to fix them up and move them out.
Yep. Hey, so it says this even extended to retail stores, also started moving to suburbs to be closer to the customers. Mm-hmm. This is so instead of us getting, you know, the Whole Foods and things like Sprouts and stuff, I know in the Bronx, we had like Associated, Fine Fare. It was basically like a super bodega. So it was like okay, we're gonna open up something, and you know, bodega's like much smaller, right? With the aisles are small, but it was like a super bodega where you got your real ethnic food and stuff like that, right? Kind of like Food City, right?
Right.
I say
okay.
like Food
right.
City, right? But not even as nice. Like Food City's actually kind of nice, right? And it says from the 1930s through the 1960s, following the Depression, Franklin Delano Roosevelt New Deal FHA enabled the growth of the white middle class by providing loan guarantees to banks, which in turn financed white home ownership and enabled white flight. That sounds like the white man got a little help from some public services that they certainly are talking about and complain about our people getting.
Oh, right. So that was a part. That was a part of them bootstraps.
Yeah. Yes. That was that was part of the bootstraps that helped lift them up. So financed white home ownership and enabled what was called white flight, but did not make loans available to blacks.
Right.
So they try to talk about we did everything on our own. Why don't you do something? Be responsible for yourself. Nobody wants to see. And this is the subtlety. And I'm going to have to follow this up on another show because it's just too much. We only got like 2 minutes left. This is the subtlety of that white supremacy that people say, Adam Carolla could be on there and say, I didn't experience this, that, and the other. Listen, you're giving an individual story, all right, of what you had to do as an individual, but things were set up and there for you. This New Deal was not for black and Hispanics when this came out.
No.
The New Deal was a boatload of what's now known as social services.
Right.
Mm. There it is.
Food stamps.
That were set up for white people.
Yes.
They were the first people on food stamps and welfare and social security and all that stuff. And then because of the white supremacy, because of institutional racism, because of that white privilege, they were able to take those services and do better for themselves. Whereas we now in this vicious cycle of institutional racism, it became a dependency on it. Versus this being something that helped buffer them up and move them along. I'll probably have to, like I said, I'm going to save the rest of this for next week. We'll be broadcasting on the road. So
Adam
I'll go
Carolla,
over this.
Geez.
Right. Yeah. Well, and then like, you know, his voice is a little annoying. So it's like the way he was telling the story, because he's like naturally like sarcastic.
No, he's very sarcastic, and that's why I can't take it serious.
So I only saw like 5 minutes of his story, and I saw where he was going, and I was like, he's trying to basically give me a story about how he pulled himself up by his bootstraps, you know. And then I hear something like this, and it just like that's like Trump trying to say he made it on his own. Yeah, your daddy left you a bunch of stuff.
No, this is Trump's exact words. Listen, with a small $1 million loan that I got from my father, I was able to A, B, and C.
A small $1 million loan? Are you kidding me?
Mm-mm. Let me get a small $100 loan.
Modest
right.
loan of $1 million.
Stop. Man. Stop. Anyway, that's the Power Hour, Native Latin and Black Biblical Topics. We'll continue on a little bit more with this discussion on next week's show, Lord's Will, and we'll continue to dive more into this institutional racism and its effect on our people today and show you biblically the institutional racism like we did today. All right? So with that, we say shalom.
Shalom.
One.